All right, how did everybody deal with the flood yesterday?
Look, no one wants to hear this, but I was very marginally impacted.
Yeah, you're right.
I got caught in the rain with my dog. Yeah,
no, that's good. That's good from you. Jose, you keep power? Did both you guys just have a grand old time?
Oh, yeah. People came over to charge their phones.
Yeah, it was fine. People came over to your place to charge their phones?
Yeah.
I put that out there to friends, and then it didn't. And then my phone died before I could actually get an Uber to go to a friend's. And then I went outside thinking, maybe I'll just hail. It was a disaster.
Yeah.
So I was a literal caveman for a little while. I just sat in the dark.
Rubbing two sticks together?
Being like, hope it comes back on soon.
Brutal.
Yeah, it did. It sucked. It wasn't the worst of the people that were driving.
For sure. So
and
that's
that got
like,
trapped.
Those
are the number one you want to hear the story from them today. But then, like, I was driving and it was wet and I had to leave my car. You're like, whoa. That's a good story.
I had to drive to work last night, but I live in the city. And so, like, whatever. It took longer than it should have. And I get terrible road rage. So I was absolutely furious. But then I'm talking to guys who were commuting from out of the city. And we're like, oh, yeah, it was Mad Max out there. Mad Max.
I got to tell you, like, if this is not this traffic crisis that we have right now in the city, which is going to last years. How is this not the time where we're just going full bore, gutting everything and building more subway lines and better public transit? Like, how is the takeaway from this cannot be, don't worry, when we get that extra lane back, things will be fine.
The floodproof lane.
Like, this has to be, and not just yesterday, this entire experience. I don't know how you could not come away from this going, huh. You know, maybe we should build more public transit. Maybe we should get more light rail. Maybe we should get more subways. Maybe we should try to get a bullet train. Like, this is the way forward. This is the only way forward for this city. We can't just continue to be cars only. I can't believe the amount of people that still right now, despite this drive, won't take the GO train from out of town where they go, yeah, it's hell. I go, just get on the GO train. At least, you know, even though it's packed during the hours that you might be going, at least you'll move.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at least you'll go from point A to point B without hours spent. And these people that I keep, they're like, well, I got all my stuff and it's fine. And then all of a sudden, as soon as you give them that solution, all of a sudden, like, the complaints go away where they're like, oh, the drive is hell. It's crazy out there. It's Mad Max, like you mentioned. And then you go, just take the GO train. They're like, well, you know, it's not that bad.
You know, I get to listen to my audiobooks.
Yeah. As though headphones don't exist. I don't know how anybody that doesn't live near the subway line exists. And then when the subway goes down, whenever there's the slightest infraction, or the slightest complication, they got to shut it down. But the solution is to bring out buses that don't move. They're like, don't worry, we're going to bring out buses that will pile hot people onto them, and it will just destroy the city.
Just clog up Bourne Street.
Like, here's my actual idea. When the subway's down, no shuttle buses.
Yeah.
Just walk.
Yeah.
That's it. There's no path. There's nothing for you here. Maybe at the very ends of the subway lines, like maybe between, like, on the west side, I'd be... like Keel to Kipling?
Sure.
Is that fair? Is that fair? Like,
but in the downtown chunk, it's just every man for
himself. No. There's if you're at Ossington Station, at Bay Bloor, and the subway goes down, there's no buses coming. You got to sort it out for yourself. What an immense waste of money too for the TTC.
Oh yeah.
Which, by the way, should tell people, like, they operate at a loss because people get so mad at them and they think it's like greedy. They're making so much money. It's like, nope, TTC operates at a loss. Anyway, this is how I expected to start today. I thought I was going to gripe about being in the dark. How do you guys spend, when you have the power out, how do you spend your time waiting? Like, what do you do?
I mean, just getting more and more furious by the second, mainly. I don't know, read, I guess.
I read yesterday.
Yeah,
I read for a couple hours. It was actually very nice.
Sure.
I got to tell you, like, not having a phone and not having any other option but to read in what little natural light I was getting into my place, pretty good.
Renaissance, man. Yeah, I like it.
I felt so smart. Look at me reading a book forced to read this dense book that I've been putting off for probably the last 6 months that I went out and bought all ambitiously, being like, sure, I'm going to buy this super dense book about, city construction. Like, sure, I'm going to read this book. And yeah, all of a sudden, boom, I was actually reading it.
And now you're going to put it away for weeks before you dip back into it?
No, here's actually the good part. Now I'm into it, because that's the thing with all books for me.
You got past the tipping point. You're in now. Gotcha. Nice.
I got to get to chapter 3 to 4.
Yeah.
If I'm at the very beginning of the book.
Yeah. Easy to put away and make it collect dust a little bit.
No, thank you.
Yeah, 100%.
As soon as I start to get into the book, once I start to put in the actual effort, like once I get an hour and 30 minutes into the book, essentially, of reading, I'm in.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I'm a voracious reader. All of a sudden I'm tearing up the pages. And that was me yesterday when I got the power back. I kept reading.
I mean, good on you.
I didn't watch the All-Star game. I know that's like our property, but you got to be a little
just thick. Reading?
No.
On in the background?
The MLB All-Star game.
Yeah.
Like, no, thanks. I'm good. I can't. As people don't care at all about NBA All-Star weekend or NHL All-Star weekend. As I'm getting older, the only thing that I remotely care about is three-point contest and the dunk contest.
Right. The game itself is
every other All-Star festivity. Like now there's this buzz about the NFL going to it's 18 week schedule with the Pro Bowl in the middle of the year.
In one of the bye weeks or whatever.
And I went, I don't care when you play the Pro Bowl. I will never watch it. I will never watch the Pro Bowl.
This comes up every year, by the way, is that video of the like bunt derby in Korea or whatever comes up. And then people ask for Major League Baseball to do the bunt derby thing.
Yeah.
Look, and I know this is not an original idea, but still, I would love to see the bunt derby.
You say that you'd watch
five seconds
of bunt derby and you'd be over it.
At least give me something, you know? We're running it back. Like, let's think outside the box, you know? Let's try to keep innovating.
I think that's what they're trying to do with the home run derby, where they went, well, we're going to go change these rules. And then I went, I just don't care. I could not care less. Like, the only fun thing about the derby was reading Twitter, all the people getting mad, going like, don't forget the Jays traded Teoscar Hernandez. And you went, no one forgot.
It's like, wait, that's that guy?
That's Teoscar Hernandez? I'll say this. This is when the power goes out, I always think, I don't want the things in the fridge to go bad.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always really afraid to open up the fridge.
Right.
That's my number one thing.
Such as starving?
Yeah, because I'm always like, well, it's warm. If I open this up, how? Like,
sure.
So I'm keep the fridge closed. The first thing I do is go get the Brita out of the fridge, put it on the counter and be like, right away, you're there, or whatever other food, and then try to keep it closed the rest of the entire time. That's move number one.
Yeah.
Move number two. Get a book. I usually do try to go for a walk and like see, but yesterday was like raining and disgusting out. So I was like a very inside guy. Like I felt very cave. And normally it's, you get one of two things. You're forced to read or you're forced to go for a walk and like check out stuff or like go find. I threw the mixer out there to a couple friends to be like pints, but people work jobs, real jobs.
I know, it's always tough for people like us.
I feel like a bum. It's in the middle of the day, no power.
Mid-Tuesday,
and I'm like, what are you doing?
They're
like, I'm at work. I'm at my real grown-up job. What are you doing? I was like, yeah, I got stuff to do as well.
I'm reading.
I'm going to be talking about the MLB All-Star game tomorrow and some of the prospects that the Jays drafted. Yeah, it's a very serious day for me. But here's what I don't mind about power outages. Life's all about little tiny games.
Mm-hmm.
I like when you have your cell phone battery and your laptop battery.
Oh, yeah.
And you're basically trying to ration them.
Yeah.
No, you're rationing the things out. That's the fun game. The only thing that sucked is that I lost the game because I'm addicted to my phone and I couldn't stop checking it and being like, hey, when, and I did, I kept getting to the point where I went, okay, I'm going to go to a friend's as soon as my power goes to this, but I didn't want to get an Uber because the traffic was insane. And there was like $1 billion surcharges on every single thing.
Of course,
and I kept going like, oh, I'll just wait this out a little longer, a little longer, a little longer, a little longer. And then all of a sudden I went to look at my phone. It was bang dead. Sucked.
Should have come by, man.
But I do like that game. Like I do like the put the phone on low battery mode. Like, yeah. You're a survivalist.
Yeah. Closing all the apps.
That's
all
the closest thing
apps.
I get to Survivor Man. You remember that show?
Yes,
where it was like you go out into the woods and be like, hey, this is what that was. That's the closest thing I ever get to it. Anyways. Okay. So we're going to try to hook up with Jeff Ponce, prospect writer for Baseball America, who's the lead guy for the Jays. We'll see if we get in touch with him. I don't think that Mike has him on the line now. Or do you? He's there? Oh, okay. So, yeah, we're going to talk to Jeff in a second. But I do want to talk about a few other things today. And one is the Bronny discourse, because I think it's starting to peak. And then, yeah, Gary Trent Jr. ended up going to the Bucks. But anyways, before we do all that stuff, Jeff Ponce, prospect writer for Baseball America, who, again, is the lead on the Jays. What's up, brother? How are we doing?
Pretty good, guys. How you doing?
Doing well, man. Doing well. So let's start with this. How long does it take you to prep for this? What is the process like? Because it never ceases to amaze me when we're into the baseball draft, when we're like pick 333, and then you're supposed to have even, granted, not a huge opinion, but even at least like a small evaluation of the value of that pick.
Yeah, so 2025 started last night.
Yeah.
So
oh,
I was,
no, that's I horrible. I don't want to hear that. That was the most depressing thing that I was like, you got to be
no,
like, last night is a huge beers night for everybody that covers like minor league baseball. Like, all we do is like go out. It's a massive party. But instead, you're like, no, we got right back to work.
Yeah, no, I live out here in Massachusetts, and I'm fortunate enough to have the Cape Cod League local to me. So, you know, that's the top collegiate summer league in the country. There's 10 teams. I'd say, you know, you probably have 350 players that are draft eligible over the next 2 years that cycle through there. So I got home, and honestly, like, anybody who was at the draft with me, I was like, I'd rather be at home right now watching Cape games. It's the best. So I get out there, and I get a real opportunity to see, you know, most of these players, especially the guys that are going rounds 2 to, like, you know, 10, 12, 13, and get a good look at them. I mean, and the thing is, it's you know, it's not always necessarily the guys that have the biggest pedigree or the most famous heading into the Cape. You know, I had a guy pre-draft a few years ago by the name of Ben Rice. You might know him. He's playing for the Yankees right now. He's a 13th rounder. It's a guy who hadn't played in 2 years, you know, gets out there, rips it up. And, you know, I've been singing his praises for about 2 years. I had a lot of fights with the guy that does our Yankees list internally, and was like, this guy should be ranked higher. It's the best part of it. So I really enjoy the work in that sense. You know, the high school guys, that takes a little bit more work. That's a lot more video work for me. I'm not at PG National. I'm not at, you know, some of these different events where you're going to see these guys playing. The summer prep circuit. So, you know, a lot of that's already started on the high school side. It's kind of difficult for, you know, a lot of guys that cover the draft, we'll say internally for teams, because there's this month now that they've moved the draft back from June to the July date that we have now, where these guys are juggling, you know, finishing up turning in reports and recommendations for the current class while they're getting their first looks on next year's class as well. So it's a really interesting process, but I think it's, you know, I like the work. So I'm always happy to be out there watching games. You know, once the draft ends, I think it's almost like a pressure relief valve comes off, and you're like, all right, I can start next year. And, you know, you build up slow, and then it gets a little bit crazy once July 1st hits and, you know, the silly season sort of starts with all the rumors and everything else.
So, one, that's awesome that you love what you do, because I try to tell people in this industry all the time whenever I talk at, like, you know, colleges or with interns that are coming in here, is you got to love it, because otherwise it's just going to be a grind and the payoff is not enough. Unless you end up being like Stephen A. Smith, then you're good. Then you're fine. But unless you're going to be Stephen A. Smith, you should probably really calculate what you're doing here in terms of passion. It sounds like you have that. That's great. Two, the Ben Rice thing, that's great. Because you know what? Being right about something first is like the best feeling a human being can have. So congratulations to you on that. There's nothing like being very early on something that blows up and you're like, yeah, I remember that was pretty good when I knew about it. And then everyone kind of attributes that thing to you for a very long time.
Yeah.
And three, this is really good news that this is your area of expertise, not only the Blue Jays, but the NCAA stuff, because 10 of their first 11 picks were NCAA players. 16 of their 21 picks also NCAA players versus high school. Last time I spoke with you was in the off season, and you know, we were also trying to be right first, warning people like, hey, the Blue Jays farm system is not very good. Don't expect a Juan Soto trade, which some people here were drawing up with legitimately laughable prospects now when you really think about it for Juan Soto. You told me, though, that this scouting department has a pretty sound philosophy in terms of why they've missed on a lot of guys, or I shouldn't say why they've missed, but that they've been conservative, that they are we don't draft for high ceiling, we draft for higher floor. And in taking 16 of 21 picks in the NCAA and 10 of their first 11 again, did they stay with that process in this draft by your estimation?
Yeah, you know, I would argue, I think there was a little bit more upside this year than we've had in previous years. There's some guys that, you know, I think fell to them a little bit. But when I start to look at some of the athletes that they drafted, some of the potential upside, I think it's a different class than what we've seen in recent years. A little bit more pitching heavy, mm-hmm. and a little bit less sort of focused on just the hit tool guys that, you know, don't strike out and walk a lot without power. You do have some guys with tools, you know, Nick Mitchell that they took in the fourth round is a guy that kind of falls into the hit tool discussion, but a guy that I saw last year on the Cape, plays a bunch of different positions. He's a double plus runner. Guy's going to be able to play a bunch of positions out there. You know, they went really heavy on the pitching side,
yep.
which I don't think is necessarily bad. They've had some success with developing college pitchers, at least into better versions of themselves. I think this high school pitcher, they took Johnny King in the third round, is really interesting as well. Big projectable left-hander, kind of has looks like an NFL quarterback and probably could still add another, 10 to 15 pounds onto his frame and add more velocity with good shapes. I thought it was overall a really interesting class for them. I like athletes, and typically they don't go after athletes. Where if you look at Cal Stevens, Johnny King, Nick Mitchell, and then one guy they actually grabbed in the 16th round, Colby Martin, who I bet you a lot of people don't know. This guy sits 100 miles an hour. Not great in the strikes. You're probably going to have to, set this guy up middle and just tell him to throw the ball down the middle and let it eat. But not a lot of guys have arm talent the way that Martin has. So I thought they went a little bit more upside than they had in previous years. And I'll say this was probably one of the worst high school drafts of all time in terms of how much depth there was in the high school class. And the numbers bear that out across the board. This was the most four-year college players that have ever been drafted in the history of the MLB draft. So put that into perspective, it was sort of a down year. I think they were smart to go after college pitching, which I think in terms of the depth later on, there was a lot of it. And then they had some money savers, like I'm sure Sean Keyes from Bucknell in the fourth is probably a little bit of a money saver there. But a guy that can really, really hit was good for me on the Cape last year. And I believe he's a longtime veteran scout, Tom Burns, area. So Tom's always is a great guy and always picks up some great players. So wouldn't shock me. He's sort of an underrated player here, Keyes, but a guy who hit, 405, 535, 798 with 13 home runs and was Patriot League Player of the Year last year. And the previous summer showed up late in the Cape Cod League with Kootenai, which is a team that I follow pretty heavily, and hit 385, 422, 769. So he's got a track record of hitting. And I mean, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Spencer Horowitz, but a lot of those guys tend to be what the Jays do a really good job of, sort of finding these later round jewels. He was a fourth rounder, maybe a little bit more upside there, but I think you even look at a guy like Alan Rodon. These are the guys that they hit on, guys that maybe come from a mid-major school, weren't as heavily scouted as, your power five type of college players. And they have just as much skills, just were loyal, stayed at their school, didn't jump into the transfer portal at the first sign that they could. And, you know, here he is in pro ball. It'll be interesting to see how some of these guys develop. But I do think Keys and Mitchell, and as far as bats, were kind of interesting picks there in the fourth and then the fourth comp round for Mitchell.
Yeah. So, yeah, I've actually been talking about this with people for a couple of weeks now. As good as those picks have been, the Spencer Horowitzes of the world and finding the Davis Schneiders, I don't think it's the best thing when your signature as an organization right now is that you draft good bench guys. You know, it's just, we draft major leaguers late. That's great. You got to do that, but probably a little bit more upside. So that's why, like, the Johnny King pick probably intrigued me the most, like that they went, okay, finally, or not finally, but that you did take a high school player, that you did take a high projection arm, that you did take, like, what, a jackpot pick, right? Somebody that you're really hoping that you nail down in that spot. Was that their highest, I would say, like, risk play for you, that pick?
Yeah, I think that. You have Carson Messina. I don't know if he'll sign out of the 12th round. He was fairly highly rated in the class. That'll be interesting to see if, you know, they save some money maybe in rounds, you know, 4 to 7, 8, and are able going to be able to get that guy under slot. I believe Cal Steven in the second round, who I think is a ton of upside, by the way, one of the better athletes in this draft, the guy that we've been saying projects to add more power, has consistently added power year over year. Wouldn't shock me if he adds a couple more miles per hour. He can really ride the four-seam fastball as well. I believe that he's taking under 1.5 at pick two. So that should allow them to move some money down the board, maybe for Messina and others. And I'm not sure if King was an overslot or not, or if he took that slot value in the third. And then I think, you know, you had a guy fall to you in the first round that I would have taken in the top 10 picks. There were some teams that were concerned about a back injury that showed up on the medicals, but go and take a look at how many innings Trey Yesevich has thrown throughout his college career. He's been a guy that, you know, whenever Cliff Godwin's needed somebody to take the ball there over the last 2 years in a big spot, Yesevich has been the guy that's done it. I think as far as starter traits, probably had the best starter traits in the draft. You know, Chase Burns is great. The stuff is really loud. I didn't talk to a single evaluator that didn't think there wasn't some serious relief risk there. Hagan Smith has had elbow injuries before out of Arkansas. You know, I really liked Yesevich. I think there was a case to have him within the top 10. There's a couple teams that, you know, I would have preferred Yesevich to the pick that they made inside the top 10. I think, and I talked to some of the folks in the front office the day after the draft, and they were ecstatic that this guy fell to them. You know, they had him ranked on their board well within the top 15 picks. It was sort of a best case scenario. And I think in this class where there weren't those upside high school guys, like we want to see them take, I think they did really well. Yeah. So, you know, just from a positive standpoint, I think it's good. And I will say they have taken some high school guys with higher pedigree. They've just all gotten injured. You know, you had Barry Era in 2022. And then last year, you know, you had Landon Maroudis. I thought Maroudis looked great in spring training. I thought he was a guy that had a huge up arrow going into the season. I actually thought he was better than Barry Era, and I saw them pitch back to back on multiple occasions. Just unfortunate that both those guys are, you know, on the shelf until probably late 2025.
Yeah, no, that is that one does suck. So, yeah, everybody seems to love the Yesevich pick. I didn't see a publication that had him below 12. I think you guys had him at 11, if
we did.
Yeah, so I think you guys had him at 11.
And I had him 7 on my personal board, so I'm very much in line with that one.
Yeah, people really seem to love this kid, and, you know, you gave a good explanation as to why he may have fallen a bit, but this is my biggest point of curiosity with him. Is he already the Blue Jays' number one prospect?
It's tough.
Because maybe, right?
Yeah, it's something I've kicked around. The thing is, I mean, is you just have really bad situations at the top where you have a guy in Ricky Tiedemann who's really not been healthy since he was arguably one of the top five pitching prospects in baseball in the first half of 2022. He wasn't healthy in that second half. they kind of shut him down. It seemed like they were just trying to put the kid gloves on him. Mm-hmm. Well, we found out beginning of 2023 that that probably wasn't the case. There was elbow issues there. And that's consistently, you know, hampered him over the last 2 years. He had sort of this small sample in the Arizona Fall League in the offseason where he did go five innings, did exceed 70, 80 pitches, which is something he hadn't done since like July 2nd of 2022. I hope that we would see more of that coming into the season. We haven't.
Yeah.
Even when he's rehabbed, he always looks good in Dunedin. Comes back to the upper minors, struggles with command, struggles with health. I think there's a I think there's a legitimate case that he could be the number one prospect in that system. He's also going to have to overtake Orlis Martinez. Martinez is a great story. The last 2 years, we've seen him really transform. And it wasn't the power, which is the funny thing, obviously, with the PED suspension. He's always had that power. I mean, ever since he came into the organization as a 17-year-old, and I saw him down in spring training, he's always hit the ball hard. Really, the thing that, you know, he developed was the ability to not swing at every single pitch because he knew he could make contact with it. The approach got so much better. It was a great story. He gets up to the major leagues. 3 days later, gets, you know, pinched for a PED suspension. He's now on the shelf pretty much until the end of the next year. The end of the year. So he's not going to graduate from prospect status. So I think it's a battle between the two of them. I would be shocked if Yesovich pitches this year. Uh-huh. So it's a three-way tie there. I think if, you know, this was a guy that we saw come out and even make five starts at like high A and he dominates in Vancouver, then yeah, I think there's a true case for Yesovich to easily be the number one.
Can I tell you something?
It's going to take some conversations, I think.
If I was a rival GM and you called me today with that and I said, I want your top prospect, and you just went down the line, you're like, we got this guy, Ricky Tiedemann. He's always hurt. He's perennially hurt. Then we got this guy who please don't watch any footage of him playing defense. Like, please, if you do, you might gouge your eyes out. Like, you might just go, baseball's
that's
not for
me. That's most of baseball right now.
Fine. Yeah, guess what, though? For him to stand out that way, where you go, boy, this is a different level of that in a short period of time, that's quite a thing. And also, he just popped for PEDs. And, or lastly, we'll give you our college pitcher that, you know, throws four pitches and dominated at his level. I got to tell you, just as a dumb guy who doesn't do these things, I'd go, yeah, I'll take Yesovich. That's the prospect that I would like from you out of everybody that you just listed.
Yeah. I think there's a reasonable case.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, my memory's long with a lot of these guys.
For sure.
Yeah.
I just think it's quite damning of your
organization.
Ricky's
also one of my favorite prospects.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with Orelvis that, I battled with a lot of people over the last 2 years about Martinez and about the improvements in the hit tool. Maybe that's me holding my ground a little bit too much.
You know what, though? That's kind of nice because
I think it's reasonable.
Yeah, you just mentioned, though, like, you're a guy who's seen a lot of Orelvis. You've tracked him for a while. And I think the natural thought is for someone who's a bat, when he is projected as your top hitting prospect and then he pops for PEDs, everybody goes, well, maybe it was because of that. You don't seem to think that's the case.
Yeah, no, I don't. I think the ability was there. I think he had an injury earlier in the year. Often when we see these guys get pinched, it's following some injury that they come back from really quickly. I'm also going to put this out there. I have not seen a white American position player get pinched for PEDs, and you can go and look at the Wikipedia page on MLB drug suspensions. You know, I think there's another element to this too that would take a really long time to get into, just in terms of what's available to American players versus what's available to international players, whether that's from Venezuela or the Dominican Republic, and some of the backgrounds that they have. Because if you go and you look at that list, even in terms of the major leaguers, it's mostly Dominicans and guys from the Venezuela. So, you know, I do think some of that is the agents. You know, we can get into whole conspiracies here about who has systems that allow them to sort of check their levels and, you know, microdosing and some of those things. I think there's a lot more rampant PED use in the game than people realize. I'm also 42, so all my heroes, all my goats, all of them were on steroids. You know, I grew up in Boston in the 80s and 90s, you know. I looked up to Roger Clemens and Jose Canseco and Mark McGwire. So, I don't know. I guess I don't necessarily look at PEDs in the same light that other people do. I would have voted for all those guys. My oldest son's middle name is Manuel after Manny Ramirez.
I thought you were going to say his middle name is steroids.
His middle name is, steroids.
His middle name is TRT. We love little TRT.
But I don't know if it's a problem. I know it's a controversial opinion, but it's one of those things. It's like there's a lot of guys throughout a lot of sports that are taking PEDs. I mean, you know, go and look at the NFL. They don't make humans that big that are built like that.
I think that a lot of people are aware, but they don't want to look at it at all. Like, even like Tiger Woods coming back in golf, you're like, wow, look at these injuries that he overcame. I was like, yeah, he's jacked. And how do you think that this happened? There was recently reports about, like, you know, deliveries of steroids, to the LeBron estate. Like, and people just were like, nope, we're not even looking at this. Like, that didn't even get, I think, a blip or even a second, right? Like, nah, there's nothing.
Yeah,
so.
And I think what people have to realize, too, is, like, if you've trained your body at all, like, it's really, really hard to maintain, you know, a certain weight while adding significant muscle. Like, being able to bulk up but also stay trim, and you kind of saw that with LeBron at a certain point. Another guy like David Ortiz, who I know even popped earlier in his career, though it wasn't official. That's another guy where, how did he get into better shape in his mid to late 30s?
Yeah. No, listen, again.
Well, not significant, losing significant strength.
No. It's just, it really is. It's one of those things where when you pop, everybody calls you a cheater. But it's like, yeah, when like a guy like Kevin Garnett, who said LeBron is on that new juice a couple months ago, nobody even covered it for like a split second. So yeah, I think we're very pick and choosy with it, but yeah, I still think that you got to raise an eyebrow when a kid does pop for it and you go, wait, he's bat. What does this actually mean? So it's good to speak with guys like you that actually know and say, like, you know what, maybe, your concerns, they should be a little bit more reserved. So overall, this draft grade that you would give the Jays, it sounds like you're a little higher on this one than a couple in the past. Again, a huge part of it is that Yesevich ends up falling to them at 20, but if you had to give it a grade right now, what would it be?
Yeah, I think a B. You know, personally,
as a B student, I'm
like,
nice, good. That's an A.
Yeah. would have liked to see a little bit more upside just in terms of the bats, but I think they kind of picked at what was available. I really like their first 3 to 4 picks, maybe even 5 if you factor in Mitchell. I thought they did pretty well there. As I said, this wasn't the most exciting draft class, and I thought they did well to get themselves some players that, you know, should all be interesting parts of this system. And at least I'll say 3 to 4 players that I think could potentially slot into their top 30 list within the next couple of weeks. So kind of see how it shakes out. I'll talk to some other folks, you know, outside the organization and internally, and get a feel for, you know, where they think these guys rank among the 30. But as you said, there's a case that they have a new number one prospect, and you know, usually that's a given for anybody picking in the top, you know, 10 to 12, we'll say. But it's not at 20, and I think that's a great improvement, and we'll see what happens over these next couple of weeks. They might make some trades, and we might have a true number one prospect that we have sort of no questions about, and then they start to build some of that depth again. I think they're in a position not all that dissimilar from the Yankees in 2016, where they sort of traded from strength and depth on the major league team, knowing that they weren't going to make the playoffs that year, and were sort of able to rebuild a little bit, call up some of the younger guys like Judge, Sanchez at the time was Austin, up to the major leagues, and that sort of set in place that next team. I think they won 90 something games the next year, 100 the following season, and 103 the year after that. So this isn't a team that I think is going to be down for long. I think this is a reset season, and I think with a couple of trades, they could be right back where they need to be next season. I'm just have my fingers crossed that Vlad Guerrero Jr. does not get traded.
Yeah.
Mostly because I'm a huge fan of Vlad, but also because my youngest son is a huge Blue Jays fan, yeah. And Vlad Guerrero Jr. is his guy. Got to meet him a couple weeks ago at Fenway, so I want to keep him a Blue Jays fan.
I think you're safe.
In Toronto, you know?
Yeah, I think you're safe. I think that the pulse here seems to be that, yeah, as much as there might be a pretty big divide in the contracts just because of him wanting to view himself as like the Soto types, the $300-plus million guys, and then the reality of the situation, which is, no, you're probably more in line with the Matt Olson types who get like the 180s. I got to feel like the Jays will factor in a price of face of the franchise fee, and they're going to slap it somewhere in the middle, and it'll end up being like 250, 240 mil, somewhere in that range, and then it ends up getting done. We'll probably have you back on soon, Jeff, because when they do make these trades, hopefully they bolster a farm system that I think latest you guys had it, what, ranked 26th for you guys in your rankings. And, maybe that's bumped up now, but... Yeah, to hit on a couple of top 30 guys when you're, the 26th ranked farm system, you take it with a little bit of a grain of salt. But, here's hoping that it is a quick reset. Hey, man, as always, really appreciate the insight, really appreciate the time, and hopefully we speak to you soon when the Jays, pump a few more prospects into the farm.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
Cheers, buddy. Jeff Ponce, baseball writer for Baseball America, who is the lead on the Jays and first identified Ben Rice. See? That's a pretty good one. It's a pretty good one. Anyways, let's take a quick break, come back, do what we missed.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Before we do what we missed, I got to say, I was wrong about the Eminem album. I said I wouldn't listen to it because it's cringy, and Mike Jose, little Gen Z idiot, he's like... Oh, it's so cringe. It's so cringe. And I agreed. And I went, I'm ashamed because I saw the Houdini song and I went, no. And I will admit this. So I finally listened to it. It was yesterday and I was like, I got to get on the bike and do a workout. And I went, I'll just throw this on. Whatever. Let me hear it. I got to listen to it once. He's one of my growing up all time favorite artists.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't say I'm a huge, like, re-listen to Eminem guy in my old age, but I do feel like he's a little disrespected now. There's, like, every once in a while there'll be some rapper that decides to, like, take a shot at his legacy, and I'm like, why? Were we doing this? Anyway.
Yeah.
I think he's, like, overrated to many and then underrated to most in that very often he's not a properly rated artist. Mm. He's incredibly influential. He's still one of the most popular. I think he still outdoes Drake on Spotify streams, which is insane.
Yeah, Spotify.
I'm like,
no.
Yeah, he does.
No, this album did go number one, though.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I just read it that he outdoes Drake in monthly Spotify streams. Anyways,
maybe right now.
I'm telling you that he does.
I don't think that's true.
Okay, sure. I like how this I is me reading something versus you saying I don't think it's true. This is
where'd you read this?
This is
Eminem Post.
Eminempost.com, Eminemhypetrain.com. Okay, so I will admit this. This is my quick album review on the new Eminem album. The concept is really not that difficult. Like he's like, it's a concept album. It's like, yeah, man, it's him basically balancing who is Marshall Mathers versus who is Slim Shady.
Right.
It's like, whoa, you got to listen to it in order. No, you don't. It's it's really not that highbrow. There are some certainly cringy moments. Like whenever he starts doing the like cancel me stuff and going at Gen Z, it's like it almost takes you. You know when you're watching a movie and then they make a mistake and you go, it took me out of it?
Yeah.
That's what happens whenever he's doing it. If he would have asked and solicited my advice, I would have told him that's the stuff you need to get rid of. It's not the actual language or offensive stuff at all. It's actually just the parts where he's like, you going to cancel me? People are like, nope, no one's, nobody's doing that. And the climate has changed. I actually think that right now you're starting to see it zag so hard the other way when it comes to who's getting canceled. Anyways, that's a different thing. There are legitimate bangers on that. Guilty Conscience 2 is... awesome. I would say there's like five or six songs on that album that I'm like, ooh, this is good. The whole thing through and through, I think it's his best work in a very, very long time, which is, I don't know what that's saying because I didn't really listen to anything since the early, I don't know, maybe 2008, 2000, somewhere in that range. I have not listened to Eminem. But I actually, I, I think this is good work. I'm just saying. I think it's good. I think if you listen to the whole thing start to finish, it might be different being Gen Z where you never really had it at all. Like, you never had the Eminem moment.
Right.
But I think if you're our age...
I'll give it a listen for sure. I'm saying... I'm intrigued now.
You give it a chance...
I'm intrigued.
...and you're our age, and you go with the idea of, like, you're not trying to... Like, none of us are still trying to be Slim Shady. You know what I mean? Like, no one
You're
in
not
their
coming
30s
to
is like,
tomorrow?
Yeah, no one in their 30s is like showing up to be like, I have a run. It's like, no, that's done. But as a like throwback kind of nostalgia album where he shows off the chops and it's high quality, I enjoyed it.
All right, I'll give it a spin.
I thought
Mike,
it was good.
Give it a spin. Come on, yourself.
Honestly, can I tell you something? I genuinely don't care what Mike's thoughts are on anything.
I'm so intrigued.
No, like I've never met anybody with worse taste in all things, clothes, tattoos, music, film. Like, he's a complete zero.
I just enjoy things.
Hey, we're going to talk about
like
Alex
stuff.
Starr. This is a good way to pivot into Alex Starr. What did he do? What did Alex Starr put up in Summer League?
Alex Starr, Summer League numbers, a tough one. Yeah. 0 points, 0 for 15 from the floor, 0 for 7 from deep, 0 for 2 from the free throw line.
What pick
Zero
was he?
Points, number 2.
Okay, so Mike Jose is the Alex Starr of life. 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. Tall, gangly loser where we just zeros across the board. No input on anything of value.
You just like stuff.
No,
I feel like that's a normal
stuff.
Thing.
No, you like horrible stuff.
I like pop stuff.
Yeah,
things that are popular. What's wrong with that?
Yes. Anyways, yeah.
Also, you're very wrong. According to Chartmasters, Drake is number 2. And this is just musicians in general. Eminem's number 7.
7. Okay. So maybe it was just this month.
It's probably just this album.
Yeah, it was probably just this month.
I think people are stopped listening to Drake for a little bit right now.
His house flooded. You see that in the flood stuff?
Yeah, I did see that.
Rough go for the boy.
Honestly, man, Drake is just down so bad.
Yeah, he's down real bad.
Like, this is how bad it is every time I used to see Drake, I was like, this guy has the coolest life. He's the coolest guy who ever lived. And now every image I see of him, I'm like, sad. This makes me sad. His house flooded. I went, what's next for this poor soul?
So you were all just going to have a lot of sympathy.
Dude,
like,
that's how badly Kendrick...
This guy deserves a break.
That's how bad Kendrick whooped him up, is that I feel bad for this multi-millionaire global brand, handsome guy
flooded.
Who's known for being like the new Derek Jeter, essentially. Like, no, man, it's horrible. Anyways, the SAR thing... It's quite a thing to outshine Bronny as the top loser of Summer League.
Like, it was funny, you know, so Jeff Ponce was saying like, this was a pretty bad MLB draft. And I was like, it's looking like it's an all-time bad NBA draft.
As soon as I saw that stat line, I went to Joe House's Twitter page to see what he had to say. So I just went, nice, I need to...
We got to have him on at some point to talk so hard. I need to
this
know what the
This is just the most
the
Washington
is.
Wizards pick of all time. This is right in Wizards lane. The Wizards cooked this one up. Here's the thing about the Alex Starr pick. We've done this a million times in the NBA, the toolsy big guy international player that people went, well, what has he actually done? And it's like, nah, it's nothing. There's no track record of any success here. This isn't like the Luka thing was so dumb because he dominated EuroLeague.
He was a pro
like,
who had been dominant in a great
unreal.
League.
Unreal. And then there's Giannis, whose nickname is the Freak. But outside of that, like, find me the Project Euro guy that was a complete zero. Like, who are they? I don't know. But every time they do this, like, we'll be the ones. And this draft class is weak. I guarantee you we're going to look at that draft as bad as it is. And there's going to be, like, 4 or 5 picks right behind him where you go, I cannot believe that they did that. I tweeted because the first two guys, because Ricochet went first. I think I tweeted it. I was like, this is how people felt watching Anthony Bennett go first that weren't Canadians. Because in Canada, we were stoked on it. We went, nice, our guy. Even though when I watched him in the tournament, my first thought was, this guy is going to struggle at the pro level. And then he went first. And I went, whoa. It's tough when you're in the first round of the NCAA tournament and you're playing a team and I watch you and go... You struggle to get your shot off. It's like watching Klay Thompson at a YMCA right now.
Nice.
That was depressing, too.
That was depressing. I also love Klay, so that's really depressing.
No, I know, but Klay is beyond washed. If you were a Mavericks fan and you saw those clips, I think you go, I'm just going to skip next season. I'm just going to nod.
I saw Kyrie had surgery for something the other day, too. So, I mean, come on.
There is no easier fade next year than the Mavs. I'm just putting that out there right now.
I like that.
There is no easier fade than the Dallas Mavericks. Okay, what's next?
Well, really quickly, you had said off air or in commercial break, and this is a great point, move over Tony Snell meme, because there's a new one. The Alex Saar.
Yeah, Alex Saar.
0 points. That's going to get a lot of heavy usage.
Yeah, Tony Snell, done.
Yeah, anyway.
His only legacy, gone.
Yeah, Gary Trent.
Yeah.
Signed a 1-year deal with the Bucks.
Yeah.
I believe, I couldn't find the actual official number.
No, he's vet
minimum. But it's a vet minimum, because that's, I think, all the Bucks had room for.
Yep.
A lot of ways to kind of go at this. There's the Bucks angle. There's the Raptors angle.
I can hit it all.
Yeah. What do we got?
Well, number one is that, again, I wish Armin was here today, because he would argue with me about how Gary Trent is so valuable and you got to give him a contract extension. This guy goes down as an all-time fumble the bag moment from the Raptors standpoint when they traded for him. When I have the tweets, they're on record. I hated the trade. I couldn't believe that they turned Norm Powell into Gary Trent Jr. I was never a fan of his game. I shouldn't say I was never a fan of his game. He's a solid player. I was never a fan of the idea that you were turning Norm Powell, one of the best assets in the draft or in the at the trade deadline that year, into a guy that was up for a contract who ended up signing for big money. And then there was this whole dalliance of, the Raptors aren't trading Gary Trent because his value hasn't hit where they need it to be, but also maybe they're just going to re-sign him. And thank goodness they didn't re-sign him, because he got offered contracts. Like, there was money on the table for Gary Trent Jr., and he kept kind of betting on himself, and the bets went poorly. Because, frankly, as talented as he is, he can be a selfish player at times. It's his bad shot selection. He's a good open three shooter. There's no doubt about it. He can create for himself from times, but it's not consistent enough at the level where you really want to pay a guy or turn the offense over to him. He struggled as the bench creator, as the bench leader. He was good with starters. I think he's going to be awesome on the Bucks.
I agree.
I think it's a great signing for the Bucks.
I agree.
How could it not? He's at a vet minimum. It's like when baseball, where they go, there's no such thing as a bad, you know, minimum deal or a bad two-way deal, whatever it is. It's the same thing in basketball with a vet min on Gary Trent Jr. It's a steal for them. So is DeLon Wright's a steal for them at a vet min. So this is clearly a win for the Bucks. I think it's good for Gary Trent that he can be on a winning team. Maybe he does boost his value by showing, hey, I can be a guy that creates space around a Giannis-type figure.
Yeah,
I can
knock down some catch-and-shoot threes.
Yeah, I think he's probably got to chill a bit on the trying to pad his stats with steals. I think people around the league are quite aware that he takes a ton of risks for the box score on defense. But when you watch the entire game, the defense is pretty anemic, and those risks really hurt the player. I think this is a scenario where the Raptors blew it not moving off of him earlier. They blew it kind of going out and getting him in the first place. The only good thing that happened was he didn't sign the contract extension. It's kind of like another one from Masai Ujiri, like the Kyle Lowry non-trade where the Knicks nixed the deal. It's like, thank goodness Gary Trent didn't want to sign for an extension, because having that number on the books when he's a minimum player kind of tells you what his value is around the league. And I'm not, whatever. I don't care.
He did reportedly turn down multi-year contract.
But that's what I'm saying, is on crap teams, he could have gone on a multi-year deal for...
Yeah.
He wasn't breaking the bank with those other places. Yeah. He didn't turn down $25 million a season.
5.2, I believe.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He didn't want to be locked in. Those are bad contracts for him. But yeah, I don't care. I'll say it. I told us so. I've been saying all along about the Gary Trent thing, and people went, oh, he's worth this. And I went, no, he's not. He's just not.
Looking back at those trades, it's wild, because the Norm Gary Trent trade, like, neither team in that original trade got anything out of it. Portland got nothing out of it.
But
the
Norm Powell was a way better player, and they should have just kept him and re-signed him, and that
100%.
Was an idiotic move by
them. And, like,
them.
If I recall correctly, the reason that they didn't want...
was money.
It was money. They wanted to get off him because they didn't want to extend him, which is crazy to think of now.
So stupid. Yeah. Go look at their numbers side by side and what their values were, and it's just, it's insane. Anyway, we got to run. Subscribe to this podcast. Leave 5 stars. Jackie Redmond tomorrow. We will see you then.